Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're live here at the Division event. Is this like what, beta hands-on, right? Kind of preview event. So I have Paris and also Pete, and on the side we have Q here chilling, relaxing, doing his whole thing with her. But right now we just finished the first part of our hands-on of the Division 2 beta. First reaction, Pete, I know you're the one that's been talking about the Division for a long time. Your initial thoughts of...
I love the 2.0 iteration. I love how they've just basically took, from what we've seen, they've taken the Division 1 and just improved on it. Gave us Division 2. I love the environments. We've said this several times. The environment, it looks amazing. It literally looks like you're standing in the middle of the Capitol.
Yes.
They've done a fantastic job from that. The audio...
Fantastic.
Itself has been amazing. I love the transition of the way the music plays when you're starting to go into an engagement. It changes the tone. It changes the feel of the overall gameplay experience. And man, they didn't try to do too much with the gameplay. The gameplay has always been fun. They've continued with that. I love the intelligence of the AI, actually. How they're not just bullet sponges, just walk straight towards you. They try to flank. They come around. They come from all over you. You know, they don't. It's not just from the front where they come.
From everywhere behind.
There were multiple times where we all got pinched and we had to like, whoa, stop what we're doing and like reassess what we're doing. So I'm having a blast. And I don't know if it's maybe just because it's new and it's fresh that we're all excited, but it's a hell of a lot better than a couple of other games we've been playing.
Look, I'm just going to cut straight to the BS on this. And what we played, just this little slice that we played, and this is the introductory stuff. We're like, what, level 5 or whatever? Yeah. I flash back to 3 years ago when Pete and I were at that Division event, and I walked away going, I don't know about this game. I don't know if they're going to have the content that I'm looking for. Just in this little bit, you can see so much content, so many things to do. And I'm like, holy, you know what? This is fantastic. They've actually honestly exceeded my expectation. Just in this little slice that we've seen already for what I was expecting a Division 2 to be. We ain't talking Dark Zone yet. We haven't gotten into Raid, Endgame, nothing. This is just the story part of the game that we're playing right now. And seeing like you have just all the activities, the settlements, and then the capture...
The control points that
control
you have to,
points,
that you have to recapture.
What was the one with the
speaker?
Yeah.
Oh, the public executions that you have to come in and stop?
Yeah, we didn't know about that. It was like, wait, public execution? What is this? And you go in. And these are just random events that are happening in the open world. This isn't a mission, a side mission, or other things that you're used to doing in the first Division. And then start going into the skill tree and just all the different things that you're going to be able to unlock and customize for your character. You know, not to mention all the weapon mods that we're eventually going to be able to do as well. There's just, I am truly blown away by what I'm playing right now. This still isn't the original vision that when they showed off that concept of the Division back in 2013 or whenever that was, but it's getting damn close. Damn close to it. I'm very impressed with what we played
today.
Could
this be, and I mentioned this to you guys, could this be the first beta that we ever seen with this amount of content?
When I got to talk to Julian, the creative director, Julian Garrity, he mentioned this is about a 10-hour slice of gameplay for this beta, what you're going to be able to get out of it.
I'm glad you brought that up, Danny, because it's almost a sense of overwhelming. Like, you have so much to do, and... It's not like it's trying to force you to go through it because you go through it at your own pace, but it feels like there's so... It almost feels like it's too much. Is that possible?
Remember that every interview I mentioned this, one of the issues I was having, I felt like it was so much in the first game that I didn't know where to go. With this one, I felt I already know what to do, where to go, because I felt like every time we were doing something, there was always like a message, like that will pop up. This is what you could do. This is how you could upgrade. This is where you gotta go to get your skills and all. I felt like, man, okay, now they taking me.
They're holding your.
They're holding
hand
my hand.
Saying,
exactly.
Come here, do this.
Exactly.
Try this.
So I didn't. Honestly, I wasn't feeling lost at all with this one. But here's the thing. This is also the first beta where they also will introduce you to the end game, which that is crazy because the first question you guys ask in the it says in the beta, I can't remember which part, a message will pop up. It says, "Welcome to the end game." I mean, we never haven't seen it yet, but it's there also part. In the beta,
I don't know. I can't talk. I can't speak on it because I didn't.
Oh, you didn't.
That.
Oh, you didn't see the same man. We saw the message.
I didn't see it.
So, all right. So, Paris, the first time that you guys went to see the Division One, and one of the first questions you talked about the end game, mm-hmm. and I think it was the producer, somebody was there. You interviewed me. He said, "Yeah, it's a pink gun." Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, I remember very well.
And then E3, the first thing that Julian talked about besides the campaign and everything was.
End game.
I think it's so smart that they added this in the beta. Super
smart.
To
let people know what's coming.
We're not effing around.
It is just the tease of teases to let you know. Oh, my God. I'm just going to be blunt. And we still have a whole nother part two to play here today. But just from this part one, this beta, because we are playing the private beta, this beta is going to sell this game at launch. People will pick up this game at launch playing this beta. It's just.
I want to ask you because you brought up, you know, it's a potential 10-hour slice of the game, which we know already from previous gameplay sessions, and we're talking with the folks here that the regular campaign is supposed to be like a 40 hour experience. Do you think that people could get burnt out on a 10-hour slice? Because that's a significant amount of game time to devote. And I mean, granted, yes, 10 hours gives you more than enough time to figure out, okay, yeah, this is something that I want to continue with. But do you see this as a potential to burn out, you know, people before they get the full game?
Hey, I'll take you back 15 mm-hmm. years ago. I remember playing that Metal Gear Solid 2 demo. I probably put 40 hours into that because that's just how much I loved it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think if people play this, and even if it's 10 hours of content, if they're really enjoying it of what they're playing, I don't think so. I do caution. And this goes back to Destiny.
That's why I brought it up.
Where Destiny didn't really have vanilla. Destiny didn't have a lot of content past the beta that they gave us. So it was like we were replaying all that stuff that we've been playing in the beta when it launched. So I hope a lot of this isn't necessarily replayable at launch. I hope they do mix it up.
Right.
When it comes out.
Well, that's exactly why, because, I mean, there was people who, you know, I remember reading it on Reddit and Twitter. Yeah. People were burnt out on the beta, that they didn't want to even go and try and continue and to try to invest time in that because they'd already done it for 10, 20, 30 hours. My concern or my fear is that translates to what we're doing here, and then, you know, a 10-hour beta, people are like, oh, well, I've already figured, I've seen everything that I need to see.
But
why,
but that's where the end game teaser comes in. You're not being able to see that. And think about
it. PvP and
we even saw
it
in the skills, the different skills that we can unlock. A lot of them are not being allowed in the beta. So again, you'll see it, but it's not in the beta. So it's another teaser to say you want the final game to be able to use all this stuff.
Do you remember the first beta, Pete? Paris, do you remember the first? I don't remember like the amount of content there. I can't remember exactly. Was it very small or what? Because
First one was basically you getting to open your base of operations, but it stopped more or less there.
And that's it.
It gave you a couple of side missions outside of it, but it allowed you to do that. I don't even think it let you do the Madison Square Garden mission, which was, you know, you had to traverse all the way up to the top of Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. and you had to fight the boss, and come back, and then you continue working on it. It was basically just a small slice of that first part of the island of Manhattan.
My question to you guys, how important was it for them to add the end game into this beta? How important do you think it was for the developers? Because
you're not doing any of the end game.
No,
in the beta
is
though.
In the beta, Pete. You didn't get to see the message. It's
no, we, I don't, but I don't,
You're not going to do the beta. Why would they do the raid in the beta?
So why would they... Wait, what?
Well, talking to Julian Garrity again, that's... A raid is a part of endgame. A raid is a part for the hardcore player, right?
Right. The tease.
But that is not what they're... That's not the end-all, be-all of what they're calling endgame. I don't want to give it up yet. But I know. And trust me from what he told me, and you will get to see it, and we'll talk about it later after all three of us get to see it.
Right.
I don't want to say game changer, but very impressive. Very impressive what they're going to be able to do and say this is now our end game for the Division 2.
So one thing that dawned on me during the presentation where they started talking about world logic and how effects and, you know, things that you do in the game impact other minor things going on in the background of the game made me think back to things like Far Cry, where you're working on... You know, like you've unlocked a settlement. They need to start building up their settlement and creating a village and making it stronger. It's exactly what they're doing. They're bringing that small component of side mission into the Division. And I'm curious if that was in the original iteration of the Division, was that like a target goal that they maybe perhaps scrapped and said, you know what, maybe we're not ready for that. Let's do this at a later date.
They kind of had one. You know, when you walk around the city and you see like somebody there that's struggling and you give them like water or food, then you sometimes will get like an item or XP. That's it. That's so there was a time that I didn't really care after a while. Like, I don't need to talk to that, but I'm just going to go to my mission. Now with this, now I want to go there and help out and upgrade because it's going to benefit the player, right?
Well, that's not what I meant though. I'm talking more of the what? How there could be like a supply depot transferring supplies from one settlement to another area.
Yeah.
Right? Your focus isn't just on the game. And actually, this is one of the things I brought
up
with Keith
Evans.
Yeah. It's like you're just not going on fetch it quests to do specific things.
Uh-huh.
You have to do your quests and whatever you're doing to progress through the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to keep track of all these other settlements, go back, make sure that they're okay, help bolster, drop off supplies. If, you know, maybe the influence of the other factions, because there's three factions we've been told about.
Yeah.
You know, now you gotta hold them down, you gotta push them back so that your guys can keep pushing out and spreading its influence and improve. I'm seeing a lot of that Ubisoft, you know, that Ubisoft formula starting to trickle down into the Division, which we didn't really see a lot of in the first one.
That's what I was trying to tell you, that it was kind of there, but we didn't really care, and it was like, whatever. With this one, now, like you were saying, now you have to go back and see what's going on, because at the same time, now you do care. Now there is a reason for you to do that. Before, it was like whatever, you know?
But see, it's different. And I understand what you're saying, but we're just arguing the same point.
The same thing, yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, giving a person a bottle of water in the Division 1 versus now you have to go back and check in on settlement that you may have checked on maybe at the beginning of the first two to three hours of the game, and now you're so progressed further on into the campaign, now you got to go back to that first area to make sure, you know what I mean? It's like you're always going back to several different parts instead of always focusing your efforts on advancing to the more difficult stuff because you want the loot that's offered in those areas.
So the more you do that, what type of loot we will get to see for those that haven't...
You're asking the wrong dude, guy. I don't have an Ubisoft.com email address, so I can't answer that.
Because I thought... I don't know if you guys were really concentrating on that, too, in the game. Because we went to a couple areas, but we were there for, like, a little bit to meet, like, a character, and then we left, you know? But anything else, Paris? I know this is still part one of... you good? And we're going to take a short break, and we're going to pray now for the second time. We have no idea what they're going to show us. This is like real time right now. We're at the venue. Any predictions, Pete? Because Pirate knows I don't want him to tell us, but any predictions on what we're going to see next, you think?
No, because he's already told us, kind of, and I don't want to try to spoil anything, so why am I going to do that?
All right, we're going to go. So we'll be right back after this.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so we're back here in part two of our coverage of Division 2. Oh my God, Pete. Game changer? Or what? After playing the second part of this beta.
I don't know if I want to use the term game changer.
It is a game changer.
Because it's got, you know, the association to another beta demo that we played this past weekend.
Oh, come on.
I wasn't.
Wow.
I will say, though, I mean, and I'm pretty sure that, I mean, the three of us were floored this past, you know, this past day playing with everything that we played. Between the campaign and world missions that we did, the end game that we just went through, I mean, we spent an hour and change on this, and then, like, it was.
Was it 2 hours?
Two hours.
We did the interview. Right. So we broke it.
Take that time off.
All right. So think about just over an hour's worth of content per mission. Like, that was nonstop action that we were going into. Right. Mm-hmm. It was barely enough time to get to regroup and get your ammo and get your stuff ready. And then next thing you know, you got people busting down the door coming right at you all over again.
But we got to talk, because people are like, what in the world P is talking about? So we were playing the beta. So earlier this morning, we paid the campaign, open world. That's the first part. All this, what we're playing today, is the beta that's coming out February 7th. And I think it's going to be available through the 10th.
Yeah, February 7th through the 10th.
When we started, we're like, oh, okay, all right. So we thought, usually when we go to these events, they'll show us like parts of the beta. Then they say, oh, yeah, we're also going to talk about the end game. I thought, oh, okay, this is going to probably be a separate build, right? And it was all part of the beta. I'm very surprised the amount of content that's in the game.
Yeah, I think it was 10 hours worth of content for the beta alone. So I'm curious, are they going to, like, I guess, so you go to the start menu and you select, do you want to do the open world or do you want to do the end zone or the end game, right? Like, cuz how do you jump from one part to the other, cuz you have to be sufficiently leveled up as well as have the gear to be able to make a dent in some of these enemies.
I think once you complete everything, you're going to have that option. Okay, you already completed the first part. Now it's time for the end game.
Again, Danny and I saw it. There was I'm sure in our capture footage, we'll find it when we go back and look. But it popped up at a certain point. We completed something, and it said something about doing end game stuff. Like,
it happened when we got out to the White House, right?
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember exactly. Yeah. Look, you may not want to say it. I'm freaking say it. This might be the most impressive demo I won't say ever, because there's BioShock and things like that, but it is definitely in the top five impressive betas I've ever played. For the most part, no real issues. You see a couple, but we had one bug where we had to start over, whatever. That's fine. But again, it's a beta. I'm not too concerned by that. We played on PC. Again, for the most, and this was AMD rigs, and we were playing in 4K, 60 frames per second. I mean, like I said, for the most part, it was fine. No real issues or anything. There was other people that were playing on Xbox. I kind of peeped over shoulder a little bit, but I can't really comment on that. But what they're doing by creating this new end game where you're going to do your campaign, they're bringing in the fourth faction, the Black Tusk, and they invade and literally take over Washington, D.C., and you got to fight through every mission again, every settlement, all that stuff again. But now it's at end game level, end game weapons. Black Tusks are just, they're armed to the freaking gills with everything. They got all the gadgets that you got, and they're coming at you. You know, like you said, it was and guys, when you see our footage, you'll see what we're talking about. It was a battle from start to finish, both missions that we did. I am very impressed, because, like I said, we're not even talking to raids or any kind of stuff. We're just talking, you're just going, this is, like I said, is Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past. You're just going to the dark world and doing it all over again with the difficulty just ramped up to 10. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want for endgame. You want stuff like that. And that stuff that's available day one. We're not even talking about, what did they say, 3-episode stories they're going to come out with in the first year. They're going to keep adding content in. Obviously, we're going to get the 8-man raids. I mean, I spent a week playing Anthem. I went to EA. I played Anthem. And I'm not trying to hate on the game, because just like I said in the podcast I did the other day, play it for yourself, judge it for yourself. I'm saying for me, for Paris, it's not even close. It's not. It's just not. And I'm just telling the truth. Neither game is out yet. I'm going by the demo that I played. I'm going by the beta that I played of both games. It's not even close. It's not. You can tell that this is a sequel. You can tell that they've had 3 years to iterate on this, to learn, listen to the community, and figure it out. I'm not saying that Anthem won't ever get there one day. I'm just saying in 2019, it is not close, and it will not be. The Division 2 will be one of the best games we play this year, just from what we've seen so far.
Before, sorry, Pete, I took the mic away from you. Before we go with Pete, we were in the elevator coming up to the hotel room, and you said, I was very surprised they added the end game there. I was not expecting that at all. Why you said that?
Because you would think you would want people to experience that when they're home playing the final game and not as a beta. But the more I thought about it, it actually makes sense. And, you know, the one interview we did with the live
content designer
Yannick. Yeah. He even said it's been an internal debate on whether they do this or not. And you could tell by his expression, he didn't want to release it. He was like, no, y'all figure that out when the game comes out. But I understand why, because they want people to, because look, there was people like me who played The Division in 2016 and was like, nah, I don't like that game. There ain't nothing there for me. I'm out. And they never came back. I came back, obviously, in the past year, and I see how good it is. They want to attract people that didn't come back, and they want to say, look, remember that complaint you had 3 years ago that we didn't have nothing to do once you finished the campaign? Wrong. We got something for you.
Fake
now.
Fake news.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. So, again, when the last time you see me this hype for a game? Like y'all see me. That's it. I have not been this hype for a game.
And to have a game be mentioned in the same breath for excitement and hype as a game like Cyberpunk, that goes to show you, again, you mentioned it, and I think we've all said it, whether it be on separate interviews or you know, together as a group, when you have 3 years to work on it, on top of the existing iteration, on top of having to have all that feedback of what works, what doesn't work, right? Obviously, you know that they've been listening to the community. You know, they've got a great rapport. The Division community is very vocal. They let you know. It's not like they hold it back. They let you know what needs to be fixed. There are some people that aren't happy with some of the stuff that Terry and Tony did on the first Division.
No.
You know, like some of the nerfing that they did. They I remember the comments on Twitter. Don't let Terry touch the PvP. Yeah. Okay, those were very critical comments. And they listened. You know, we saw the changes. I mean, you talked about, you know, three episodes. Don't forget, they also said you're going to have three end game, you know, three episodes, three new specializations on top of the three that
you get in launch.
There.
Yeah.
You get new threats, factions, projects, bounties, and everything. And on top of the whole Black Tusk thing.
One thing with the Black Tusk thing that we got when we did the interview with Yannick, which this actually leads me to something else, was the fact that when we talked to Terry and Tony and we're talking about normalization in the Dark Zone, and I'm like, I don't know if you should do that. Okay, you got the Occupied Dark Zone. All right, that'll be the end game one. I get it. Well, Jesus Christ, the Occupied Dark Zone is the Black Tusk. And what we just did, I'm like, oh my God. Now I get it. I get it now. I get why they're doing it that way. So I think that's going to be a great opportunity. And other thing I wanted to bring up, because obviously everyone that knows me, I'm big into Destiny. I've been playing Destiny since 2014 nonstop. And this is the first time, the legitimate first time where I could sit here and say, Bungie going to look at this and go, damn, we screwed up Destiny 2. Why didn't we do this? This goes back to the whole point. Massive is doing the opposite of what Bungie did at the launch of Destiny 2. Instead of stripping things out and over-casualizing it, they're bringing everything forward, you know, from that they've learned from the Division into the Division 2.
Yeah.
That's how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, that's one of the slides that we saw. And they were like, you know, everything from the Division 1 is coming over. So world tiers, recalibrations, exotic weapons, landmarks, everything. And on top of that, they're throwing weekly invasions, I guess similar to Nightfalls on Destiny. You know, roaming vendors, occupied dark zones, you know, clans, specialization. There is so much content. They are truly, I hate to say this right now, but changing the game, changing.
They're raising the bar for what to expect from open world looter shooters. That's what they're doing.
Most definitely.
Yeah, now if a company plans to release a game, or they're planning to release like a beta or a demo, it has to be on this level now.
This is why I said it's a game changer, because I play a lot of demos in my life. A lot. From way back. I have never seen a demo with this much content ever.
Again, when I interviewed Julian, he said this is going to be a 10-hour slice of gameplay.
And that's a demo.
And it's just a beta. It's just a beta. Oh. It's insane. Dude, and I'm not saying this, and I know people listening to this is rolling their eyes. I'm not saying this to hate on it. I am saying this because this is just the freaking truth. EA screwed up putting out Anthem now. I'm telling you right now.
That's exactly what I wanted to say as well.
Putting this game out, putting out a new IP that is very low on content at the jump is going to be a mistake when 3 weeks after, people are going to be like, whoa, all this at launch?
To be fair.
But I have said this for 6 months.
You did.
I've been saying this for 6 months.
But to be fair, EA knew, it's coming out, right?
But they were not expecting this monster, yo.
They were not. No, and now they're stuck. They can't delay the game. They can't. They have to release it now. But I think that it is good that this is happening, because now throughout the year, or maybe the next game, now they have to really make a change for the next game. They cannot, even Bungie, they cannot release a game like that in the past. Like, the same thing. It has to be that type of level of The Division 2 with an amount of content and end game and so on.
This beta potentially has an opportunity to actually kill Anthem, because people are going to play this beta and they're going to have so much content, so many things to do in the beta, that it's going to quell the desire to want to play Anthem.
You know, it's sad that in the demo of Anthem, it was like, what, how many missions? 3 missions, 1 stronghold, and what else? There was 2 other things.
It was free roam.
That's it.
But here's the thing. I enjoyed the demo.
No, I like it. I enjoyed the demo.
Yeah.
But this demo, or this beta, however you want to phrase it, for the Division 2, I'm curious the result of what's going to happen the following week after the Division 2 beta comes out, because 5 days later you have Anthem.
Oh my God, I never thought. I wasn't thinking about that.
People potentially could cancel their pre-sales because they're going to be like, wait a minute, I just played this free beta that was infinitely better than this. People are not going to want to play Anthem.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
Grab
the mic.
Not everyone's going to be able to get in this beta, though.
Yeah,
it's not an open beta. It is a private beta.
But
word of mouth.
Here's, that's one.
Word of mouth. People are
number two.
YouTube video streaming.
Journalists.
We're going to stream it. I know. I'm going to be streaming.
I guarantee you there's going to be some media outlets out there. Clickbait, of course. They're going to say something. This is what Anthem should have been. The demo should have been like this. I'm telling you.
They're going to compare. I can see the Kotaku article being written right now. Yeah. Of course
that's going to happen.
That's going to happen. 100% that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? It's kind of the truth. And that's what I mean. I'm not trying to turn it into an Anthem versus Division 2 thing. We're here because of Division 2. We're going to talk about a Division 2. But the fact that I was able to go to that event, get really in depth with Anthem, and then to have this drastic contrast. I've been in San Francisco all week, went home for 2 days, right back in San Francisco doing this. So it's like, it's fresh in my mind, everything that I've seen that we've talked about and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's like night and day, man. And that's just, I'm just being honest. I mean, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it or talk anyone out of liking the game or whatever it's going to be. But if you put a gun to my head and say, which one you're going to choose, I'm going to choose a Division 2 because it's my style of game. It has the content that I'm looking for. The challenge is there. And I look at it like you look at that map and zoom out. Remember all the activities was popping up. I was almost intimidated. I was like, oh, this is like The Witcher 3. What is all this? It's a ton of stuff to do.
BioWare's response is going to be telling come February 11th.
Well, they have to have the roadmap laid out. Here's where you can expect content A, B, C, D, on down the road.
You think they're going to do that in the next 15 days?
Well, again, the interview I did, that supposedly that's what they're going to do, is they're going to lay out their in-game roadmap right before launch. They have to at this point.
I think their hands are tied right now. Just as a gamer, you're going to see that list of content come up on February 10th. The 4th, because you know that's when all of our stuff will be able to come out anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So on February 11th, when that demo is over, the following day, let people play the game and enjoy it. You know, play the demo, the 10 hours of content. Go through that. And that's more or less when BioWare releases what they're going to be, you know, potentially releasing their roadmap. People are going to look at the two side by side. There's no way you can sit there and look at those two and say, oh, well, yeah, I'm going to pick. Granted, there's going to be people who want to play Anthem because they want. They want the space sci-fi.
Well, maybe they get both. They probably will get both games too.
But you can't. You got to think of Little Johnny. Let's bring back Little Johnny onto the show, everybody, right?
Yeah.
You know, Little Johnny's and Little Johnny's parents are going to be sitting there and be like, all right, Little Johnny, you got one game.
For this spring
or this first half of the year. Pick one. Yeah. Little Johnny's going to look at both of those games. And
not only that, he's probably also going to look at all the other games coming out, Crackdown, Metro, Far Cry.
I'm sorry. You put all of those great AAA titles in front of me, and I'm going to look at The Division 2 as the leader.
Go for it.
You can't. I mean, compare them one to one. The Division 2, Crackdown. Where are you going?
Come on, Pete. Of course.
Division 2, Far Cry.
I played Far Cry, New Dawn. I played a couple of those games that's coming out soon. The Division 2.
None of them stack up.
No. I'm even surprised that Far Cry is coming out close to the release date of the Division 2. And that's the same
company. That's the same company.
Now, let's not compare anymore. Let's move forward. But I want to ask you guys a question. Weapons, characters, like what was the thing that you picked the most? Or
characters, I mean, that's...
Not characters, but class. I mean, class.
Marksman. You saw it during the gameplay. I was sitting there. I pulled a sniper.
You were sniping like crazy.
I was just taking heads out.
And honestly, I think it is good to have different class when you do end game.
Absolutely, because you want to have... You're going to need it. And eight players.
And definitely
eight
raid.
Players.
Maybe you need multiple.
Two of each. You're going to need each or two three. Sniper. Well, actually, there's three specializations, so you're going to need... You're probably going to have at least two or three of each.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think so. That you definitely need that, man.
Yeah, you're gonna have a combo of what is it?
And
survivalist, demolition.
And let me tell you, when we were playing the end game, the communication that we were having, because it was tough. We were stuck for a little while, like that area, but we completed that mission. Actually, we were the first ones, I think, from the whole group. The second part was a little bit challenging because we had to do an intro and everything like that. But after we start playing the second mission, we already had an idea, okay, this person, this character, this enemy is going to be like this. And at the same time, what class you had on? Soul class. So Paris had no soul class. Yeah, same for me.
Yeah, I was running an M60 and a sniper.
Yeah. Now, they don't even care. The enemies from the end game, Black Tusk. Dude, they will go in. They don't care. They will go bum rush you, man. Happened multiple times.
Black Mirrors,
and there was a lot of surprises.
We call them Black Mirrors.
Why did you guys call them Black Mirrors?
That episode of Black Mirror.
I was wondering because I was like, I don't remember reading them calling it the Black Mirror. Why are you guys calling it the Black Mirror?
But
now it makes sense.
So your thoughts about the enemies, like the first enemies from part one. And now the endgame enemies.
Well,
design wise, because I noticed a lot of them were more borky, right? Like more.
Well, remember they've got better tech, better training, so they're not just like the regular faction, you know, faction villains. Because the faction AI are basically, you know, they're people that have just picked up weapons and they're just fighting. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously when you start going to purple and the yellow, you know, the yellow bars as we all like to call them. You know, that's when you see them a little higher in level or skill. But the Black Tusk are basically Shade or Division agents, but but on the other side,
mm-hmm.
right? So they've got the tech. Obviously, we saw it. They're repairing. You know, they're repairing the dogs. The turrets.
Not only that, drones.
You know, they're shooting drones at you. They're taking out your stuff.
Go.
Yo, like you mentioned, when one of the soldiers or whatever went and repaired one of the Black Mirror, the little assault dog thing.
You were screaming.
I was like, yo, he's repairing them. What is going on?
Why does health go all the way up? Yeah. So, I mean, that's exactly what they're exactly your counterparts.
Did they repair them quick?
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Cause I was busy shooting and I didn't even notice when Paris said, I was like, where? I couldn't find it. I saw him already alive running around.
Yeah. And so obviously you've got drones that not only do damage, but they're defensive. They repair your health. You know, you've got, the seeker mines, a lot of the stuff that came back, but I mean, here they were only allowing us to have access to three. It was the drones, it was the seeker mines and the turrets. You know, you had the sniper turret, which I thought was really, really cool. You know, you have offensive, you have a defensive, and you've got, just the variations that they have on the different skills on top of everything that you have at your disposal as a Shade agent. Dude.
And they even, one of the drones, one of the skills that it has, you can get basically a healing drone. Yep. Where it will restore your armor. Came in handy big time. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we should talk about is the time to kill. With the enemy, not just Black Tusk, but just overall, to me, the time to kill felt very good and fair while we were playing. Because, you would have yellow bars that were heavily armored and it would make sense that it would take a lot. They would be a little bullet spongy because you got to take their armor off. Once you get their armor off, you could melt them. That made a lot of sense to me.
Much better than what we experienced in December.
Yes.
When we went to Red Storm,
it was.
Because that was one of the critical components. That was one of my criticisms, was that they were too soft.
Yeah.
They're too easy. And maybe it was because, we were higher level. We were level 30 and we had, all the good weapons. And the way my mind was thinking is, that makes for better content because you're able to go in and power your way through because you've got level 30 gear with like lower level people. But in this one, it brought back some of that struggle bus mentality of the first division where enemies are very are bullet spongy and like you have to work on it. You have to target those soft spots, which, signify as like yellow flary, ricochets that signify, hey, this is the weak spot. So target it, so you want to target the backpacks, you want to target, the red pouches or even in the regular campaign, the crazy faction people to run at you. And you shoot the green pouch on the side, and then all the gas comes out, and they start freak out. And actually, if you get affected by that, you get mm-hmm. really you get wonky and crazy. Mm-hmm. You're all doped up like you're at like Woodstock.
There was one feature that we haven't mentioned. I know earlier you said the gamers are going to spread the word. You know how they're going to spread the word besides streaming? Photo mode. None of us used it.
Yeah, I didn't use it.
We didn't use it, but
it's there.
It's there. And they could share that. They're going to grab that a photo, share it online, and spread the word. And it's going to go around for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Anything else?
Yeah. Now, another thing we haven't really talked about too much is Washington, D.C. itself, because this was our first time actually being out in the open world and could pretty much go wherever we wanted. So I know for me, I was impressed. I thought it was some great level design in there. Again, there was definitely some verticality to it because you can go up and go down, things like that. It looked like a war-torn, post-apocalyptic type, Washington, D.C., post-virus and all that. I mean, it felt good. It seemed right. It seemed like this is the place that would be in the Division. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. There was moments they reminded me of the first one, but better.
Yeah.
Right? When you go through the buildings and downtown mm-hmm. area. One thing that I really want to mention is the first game. Remember when we'll do like a mission and we want to restock, get those ammos, right? We have to wait for the next person. For that person, the first person is actually getting the restock. We have to wait for them to leave and then we could go and pick it up. This time, whoever press it, it'll drop for everybody else that's not in front of it.
Well, it was like that in the first game.
Not really. You have to, in the first game, let's say you're there, restock. I have to wait until you leave. Then I go
and press it.
Oh, okay. I mean, so, I see what you mean.
But this one, I noticed that every time I was going to the box, it said full. I'm like, why full? The reason
it,
what?
Because it,
it drops it for everybody else. Mm-hmm. So it, we won't be there standing there for a long time. The mission will go a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And I really like that choice, that design choice that they made.
And I guess, you know, we touched on it a little bit, but you're not too in-depth. But again, just to reiterate, this was our first time being able to play the PC version of it, because previously we were playing on Xbox. You can tell this is going to be a nice optimized version of it. You can tell they built it from the ground up on the PC. It felt good.
People are going to ask you what PC you guys were.
Well, it was an AMD rig, Ryzen CPU, Raiden. What was it? Which one was it? Was it a Vega? Was it the GPU?
Yes, it was an AMD Vega 64.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I know.
it's essentially the 1080 Ti. No, probably more. I'd probably say it's closer to the 2080.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's their latest top of the line. And I mean, hey, I was having no problem. Mine was
it was fine. Right along. Yeah, it was fine.
You tried the keyboard control controller.
I always like to go back and forth, keyboard and mouse, and then controller.
Which one you felt more comfortable with?
They both are fine.
Yeah,
they both are fine. It's you can put it in controller, keyboard, mouse, no issues at all.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Anything else? I think we talked a lot about.
I don't know, man. It's like I almost feel like I'm gassing the game up too much, but I'm just genuinely excited for this game to come out now in March. From what we got to play, like you guys were talking, I really got up and looked at the calendar, going, "Wait, now what day is February 7th?" I was like, "Oh shit, I gotta be at work." You know what I mean? But I'm excited for that beta to come out for everyone to get a chance to play it and get to see what we saw today. And go through some of that stuff and just the different objectives and just the stories that are going to come out of it. And I don't know, man, I really think 2019 might be the year that these looter shooter games grow up, so to speak. Cause I feel like this is the first time we're seeing, you know, you had the Division One that went through his issues where a studio took those lessons learned and applied it to the sequel. And this is what we got. You know, the biggest complaint was in-game and the lack of content. You're not going to have that complaint day one.
No more pink gun.
Now, look, we're gonna burn through a lot of this content very quickly. Let's see what the replayability is going to be like in the end game. Let's see how the loot feels and looks. Let's see how quickly they are getting content out. But from everything that I've seen and everything that they've been telling us, they're hyper aware of doing all this. We know Ubisoft probably got like 43 studios working on a damn game. So I think they're going to be churning out content on a regular basis. Again, I'm just genuinely excited. I really am.
Very quick. Their choice of having all those content for free for the first year.
Well, it's like Julian said, they don't want to split the community anymore, the player base, by having some content you paid for, you know, let's say 20% of the people actually buy it. Now you got these other people that aren't. Now they can't. So in other words, we're going to get, and again, this is speculation on my part. First year is free. Fine. Then when year two hits, they're going to have a quote unquote expansion. You're going to probably have to spend $30 or $40 on it. And then you're going to get all the content for that year. It's basically an annual pass that we're going to be getting from now on. And that's the right way to do it. Bungie obviously has adopted it now for Destiny. And it's pretty much what Massive is doing with the Division 2.
Are you surprised that a company like Ubisoft are the ones that are actually changing the way we play?
Look, no. And Pete actually brought this up earlier. Yeah, let me go down the rabbit hole.
Wow, give me your props.
Where you were talking about how Ubisoft, it's them incorporating the lessons learned that they've had with their other franchises that they're putting in this game. I mean, you see elements of Ghost Recon Wildlands in the Division. You see elements of Watch Dogs in it. You see elements of even a game like Rainbow Six in there. You know what I mean? So they're learning and they're collaborating with all their studios and they're putting all these ideas together into their games to make them even better. And that's kind of how I felt playing this. I'm gonna tell you right now, and I said this probably a year ago, Ubisoft is the best third party publisher out right now. They are. Not every game is gonna be the number one greatest thing ever, but they're very consistent. You you feel like when you buy a Ubisoft game, you're going to get some value out of it. That's kind of the way. And it's not always been that way. I feel like it's really starting to become that
couple
in the past
years,
few
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
And Ubisoft has shown and proven that even if one of their games comes out and has a rough start to it, they don't give up on it. They continue to support it and iterate on it and make it better. I mean, you can just go down the list of titles. Rainbow Six is the poster child for this.
For Honor. Yeah.
You know, even Ghost Recon. You know, they obviously have had their issues over the years with their Assassin's Creed titles. And then we look at the last two that have come out. They've been fantastic. So much so, Odyssey, I wrote it off before it ever came out, and I was wrong. I was, well, wait, this game is amazing. What, yeah, you know, what's going on here? So I'm very excited for Division 2. I really am. Really, really am. I can't wait till March comes. You know, Pete and I are even talking about we're going to have to get some ringers together, jump in this raid whenever that hits. You know, I really hope with the raid they make it an event like Bungie does with their raid. So they're like, there's world first, things like that. You know, the streamers obviously get involved and all that. Mm-hmm. I just think that they've hit on something with this game.
I want to mention this because you – okay, so when we were gonna play the game, the end game, we had to go to a presentation, and you were like, "Yo, I finished the interview with Julian. During the interview, he mentioned what it is. I'm not gonna say anything. I want you guys to be surprised." How was your reaction during the interview when he mentioned that to you?
Oh, you'll hear me say it in the interview. I was speechless. I'm speechless. I was not expecting that. I was not expecting that was their approach to the end game, to literally have another faction invade and everything that you did in the campaign, nope, do it all over again. And it's going to be harder. Wow. I mean, think about it. That's what it is. And that's a great approach to that. It extends the game. You basically have two campaigns. You have the normal campaign, and then they're going to give you, I think you even said it, Pete, new game plus.
Yeah. I was going to say,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where you got to go through it again, do it all at a higher difficulty, different enemies, different situations. It's fantastic. Then throw the raids and all that stuff into it. My only concern still is the loot. And I just want to make sure that there are things to chase and not just RNG ways to get them. Like there's specific weapon quests, armor quests, like, there's this one particular gun. I don't know. I'm just the Vector. I'm just pulling out of my tuchus just to say that where the Vector, the only way you can get it is to go on this multi-tiered quest to get it in the world. Like you got to do these multi-step things to get it. I want to see those kind of things in there
if
too.
If they're bringing back gear sets, right? From
yeah,
the original
yeah, the classified division. Stuff. Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're going to have to do that. So that way it forces you to get it. Now I'm pretty sure, I mean, the same way they did it with, you know, with drops, or was it the proficiency caches, mm-hmm, things like that, random weapon cases that you find out in the wild. There has to be some way that they're going to bring all of that back. It's still mind-boggling that this isn't just the stuff that we're getting for the Division 2. It's on top of all the stuff from the Division 1.
Yeah.
So you're getting reclassified, you know, we're getting classified gear, we're getting gear sets. We're getting calibration so you can tune and get to the roles that you want to get, yep, and cater them to your play style.
And like I said, there is so much to do. I mean, there's definitely an RPG element inside that game that you can spend hours just on that, just tinkering and fine tuning your builds and what you want them to be.
It's funny. I see that same thing now in games like Escape from Tarkov, where people spend more time playing Tetris, trying to sort all their gear, going through the markets and trying to find your special, you know, trying to find your optics or a rail or a, you know, a front grip or whatever. There's so many of the roaming vendors that you'll find. So they won't always, I guess, kind of similar to like, what is it, Xur and Destiny, mm-hmm, where it's never in the same place twice. You got roaming vendors that are going to be all, you know, they're going to be roaming all over the place.
Wow. And we're saying all this, and they're still going to add back in the underground and survival mode and all that stuff. That's coming down the road. I mean, these are things that are in the Division right now that won't be there at launch, but we already knew that. You know, they'll have the
organized
PvP. But
with as many
PvP.
Things that there's going to be at launch,
yeah,
it's going to take a while,
yeah,
which is good.
Which is good.
Because it's going to satisfy that month 1 to 3, month 1 to 6, mm-hmm, while people are still fighting to get all of that gear. And then oh, here we go. We start dropping episodes on you. Next thing you know,
Now I'm about to drop a name, so I'm gonna go pick it up real quick. All right. But you know, when I was sitting there with Andrea Renee, she had asked me, did they have specialized like weapons or gear that you would get like from playing PvP? Like the only place you could get that weapon is from PvP. And I've not actually heard that answered, and we didn't ask it even when we had a second chance in an interview. So I don't know, but I would hope so. I would hope there's only weapons you can get out of the Dark Zone. There's only weapons you can get from playing PvP. There's only weapons you can get. And I kind of asked this a little bit, only weapons that you can get from the end game portion of it. You know, I want to see stuff like that. And,
well, remember, you've also got normalization, you know, so none of the perks, you know, like, you know, plus 10% crit damage or plus 20% more magazine. We haven't seen that in action yet.
No.
Right. So a lot of the stuff that we were doing today in the end game stuff was normalized. So we haven't gotten to see what that bonus is going to be when you have 10% more crit, or because you've put, you know, a certain scope and a certain mag and a certain, you know, you got, you know, 30 or 50% more stability, and you're literally just like pinning, you know, your reticle on the enemy and you're not missing a shot. You know, when you have 50% more crit damage on your sniper and you're just one shot popping with your marksman sniper as opposed to your regular sniper, all of that comes into play. And that's a lot. That's one of the things that we really didn't talk about much here in the second roundtable, was the lack of normalization that we haven't seen. So when that comes into play during real game time, mouths are going to drop because it's just going to be like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I truly think they're building two separate games, which one of the things I got to talk to Julian about was that struggle of balance between casual and hardcore and keeping both audiences happy. And I think that's the normalization is coming in so that the casual audience can play and have a shot to do all these kind of things. And then, like you said, turn that shit off. That's where, you know, you go into Occupy Dark Zone and you're going to be doing things in the end game where all that stuff is going to really matter, and being real specific on your builds and, you know, putting mods on and all that. That's where you're going to really going to have to shine to do that. Not to mention once we get to the raid, again, another place where there, and I'm sure there's going to be raid specific gear and weapons that drop in there, that's the only place you can get them. You
won't
get them
out of normal world. As a person that plays raids, Destiny, would you like to see brand new levels that is not in the campaign, it's not in the game, that's only for raids?
What do you mean levels?
World, like different levels.
Yeah,
like,
that's the whole point of the raid. Okay. That's completely separate.
Separate.
From, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder, is it going to be in Washington, underground? I'm wondering, like, how they're gonna do this? Like, how, or maybe away from the city?
How about this to blow your mind?
Yeah.
You go do a raid, you got to go back to the Division One and go to New York.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see it either, but I'm just playing along on what you're saying.
That's possible,
you know,
too.
What I mean? What if there's an entire raid that you have to go back to New York and it's changed since the Division One? Maybe it's not snowing anymore. Maybe it's summertime in New York. Completely different environment. You know? That, you know what I'm saying? But these are the possibilities of the things that they could do.
I'm wondering, like right now, the campaign alone, not the side missions, none of that, that's 40 hours. So you add all those other side missions and what's the other ones? The whatever, in the game.
Yeah, I keep screwing it up too. I keep wanting to call them the capture points, but it's the
strongholds.
No, not that, but the other thing. The
radio broadcast
then
one?
In the open world where they just randomly happen, where there's control points that you have to recapture.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Control points.
There, control points. I didn't know it.
So is that plus the end game? That's a lot of hours. That's a lot of hours. Plus the PvP part and the Dark Zone. We haven't even mentioned that. Dude, this is so worth $59.99, man. Because you're going to be there for a long time. Even if you only buy this game once, that's it. This is the only game that you buy this year. You're going to be playing this for a very long time.
Yeah, you're going to be playing it for a very long time. Like I said before, this is the first time I'm legitimately questioning my Destiny hours. I'm serious. I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious because I got my clan and we all play together and all that. And, you know, a lot of them are excited about the Division. They keep asking me questions, want to know what I know. And I'm telling you, this is the first time where I'm like, I might not be playing Destiny as much.
If you guys see Paris's face right now, he's really, he's keeping it 100 right now.
I'm telling you. I'm just trying to be honest about.
There's legit concern. Like, I wish this was on video because you're like the gears are turning. There's smoke coming out of the ears. Like, how am I gonna put time in Destiny if I gotta put all this extra time into Division? There's genuine concern on the face of Mr.
But this is a
Lily.
Good thing, though. This is I want this competition. I want, because this is going to push Bungie to make an even better game when they come out with Destiny 3 or whatever. Just like Massive has obviously learned from this, and they're going to want to stay one step ahead, too. So, and, you know, BioWare, hey, you know, give them
welcome
some time.
Welcome
to this world. Yeah. You know, a year from now, maybe we're singing a different tune about Anthem as well.
Yeah, man, I don't know what else we're going to talk about, but I think we should wrap it up, right?
I think we're good.
But it was great playing the game with you guys, man. It was cool sitting right at the front row during the presentation, both presentations, especially the second one that I was like looking at Pete. I looked at Paris. I'm like, oh my God, it was the same feeling when we were at the pre E3 last year when Julian was like, Endgame. Oh, yeah, we're going to have raids. Oh, yeah. The first year, all free. I was like,
oh, that was one thing that we've not seen in the game and they were not talking about yet. Forget a raid for a second. Incursions.
Oh, snap. This
incursions. That's going to be in there, too.
They
didn't even talk about that
at all. Is that considered?
I would call that like
a light raid.
Strike, Nightfall, right? If I had to compare it to like in Destiny.
Oh, Strike. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because the regular Nightfalls would be the incursions, but I can imagine them throwing in Black Tusk enemies on those incursions, making them twice as difficult, forcing you to use your specialization weapons.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what they're for. And you have such limited ammo on those. It's not like you can just constantly go back in the bag. I know you were having some difficulty.
I wasn't getting ammo.
Your ammo, but I kept running after those light blue weapon drop or ammo drops, filling it up and then using them to impact the armor on the yellow bars.
Because I know I'm going to have a good clip of that because I had the grenade launcher. That was my specialized weapon. And where yellow, the big bulking yellow, two shots took them down.
Oh, I forgot before we wrap it up. During the interview, you did mention, oh, we're going to see Black Tusk in Dark Zone.
Yeah, they're going to be in the Occupied Dark Zone.
It is going to
there. That's the enemies in the Occupied Dark Zone. That's Black Tusk. Think about it. And the Occupied Dark Zones, all your skills, gear, everything matters. So you got to come in there, juice to the gills, and the enemies are going to be the Black Tusk.
Gangsta.
I'm done. Drop the mic.
All right, that's it. We're going to wrap it up, guys, and head over to GamerTagRadio.com and put your comments and feedback and share this episode to your friends, family members, everybody. Just share it. And until next time, we're out. We have multiple content now here on GamerTag Radio. Multiple interviews. And enjoy. Only here on GamerTag Radio. Peace.
Listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.